When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It's this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Podcast. Unfortunately, we have another coronavirus edition. This comes with the usual disclaimer slash preface that we feel a little bit sheepish about talking sports and talking tennis while a global pandemic rages. But one of the great appeals of sport is that it is diversion and distraction. We're also told to keep our routine. So it is in that spirit that we will have a conversation. I've got Jamie here and we'll talk some tennis, but obviously we do realize there are larger issues confronting us all than whether the French Open should have grabbed those dates on the calendar. But let's talk some tennis for half an hour or so, and maybe it will get our mind off of some of these challenges that we're all dealing with. Jamie, I'll bring you in and I will ask, you know, this used to be a polite throwaway. Now I will ask in all sincerity, how you're doing.
I'm doing good. Staying home. I've only gone out for groceries. I'm hanging in. I think we're all just sort of waiting it out. I think this is the first podcast we'll have that we truly don't have tennis, you know, besides the off season. We've got a long stretch of the calendar here that is completely open. So it's definitely, these are strange times.
Yeah, and sadly, the tide doesn't seem to be going out. I mean, I see this calendar. It started as Indian Wells got canceled, and a few days after that, it was 6 weeks, and then it was the clay season, and it looks dangerously close, like we will be in midsummer as we speak. I should timestamp this just because this is all so fast moving. You and I are talking. What is it? The days are all blending together here. It is Thursday. Thursday morning. Thursday morning, East Coast time. As of now, Wimbledon is technically still on the calendar, but I am not hearing a lot of optimism from my sourcing, both within tennis and specifically in the UK.
Yeah. So, I mean, as you said, we've got a lot going on in the world, but the one thing we can talk about is tennis and when it will come back, I guess. But the bigger question is how it will come back. At this point, there are so many tournaments up in the air and such a big snowball effect, you know, with the kind of anchors of the calendar here with the Olympics thrown in. I know that you talked on our special coronavirus podcast about the impact of the Olympics being postponed. But do you want to talk a little bit about that here and how it's really going to affect a lot of things, given that it's supposed to take place before the summer of 2021, which I thought was an interesting note in the, you know, official release from the IOC. What do you think about how the Olympics will impact tennis this year and next year?
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to take a step back and say all of this presupposes, and when we're all knocking on wood or whatever the equivalent is, but all of this presupposes that we are in a bit better position now than we are today. And right. We keep using this word unprecedented, but and I think it's completely accurate, but what unprecedented also means is that we don't know how the story ends and we don't even know what the next chapter is going to be. So I think we all have various opinions, for example, about the French Open unilaterally grabbing those dates in late September and early October. That is all based on an assumption that we will be back to gathering in large places and back to having sporting events with an international sport from all over the world. I think that's a pretty big assumption. It's a hopeful assumption, and we can all sort of put that aside for the moment. But I do think before we go too far down this road, we ought to acknowledge nobody knows if, heaven forbid, a year from now, we are going to be in a position to start holding large global events. As far as the Olympics goes, I think it was a foregone conclusion. I mean, really, this was sort of fait accompli weeks ago. It's I think both a pity and also quite telling that it took until Tuesday of this week before the official word came out that the Olympics for 2020 were going to be postponed. We can talk perhaps at another time, conversation for another date about why that was. But I do think that, first of all, until there is a fixed date for 2021, we know nothing. Right. I think that the Olympics is obviously a big draw for a lot of the players. And I think there are some players that are probably prolonging their careers for the Olympic experience. I mean, you know, Roger Federer is a name that comes to mind. I think that in many ways, he loves, we always say this, he loves being Roger Federer. His body is still holding up. He loves the life and the travel. And he loves that he has a chance to add to his 20 majors. But I also think the Olympics of 2020 was a huge motivation. I mean, I think he really designed his season to peak after the French Open and then after the US Open. So really about an eight to 10 week window, which includes Wimbledon, the Olympics, and the US Open. Who knows what that's going to mean for him going forward? I also think that as we talk about scheduling, no tennis event is going to want to be opposed to the Olympics. I mean, part of this is about drawing players. A part of this also is about viewership and television rights and media rights. And if this happens to overlap with, say, the French Open 2021, I don't think they're going to want to have a large-scale major tennis tournament that conflicts with the Olympic Games as much for the viewers as anything else. So will the French Open for the second straight year not be held during the conventional dates? There is a lot up in the air right now. And I guess, you know, in some ways, sports are a mirror for all of us, right? I mean, all of us are sort of game theorying our scheduling and our plans and our lives, and we're figuring out whether it's, you know, kids taking standardized tests, which is an issue resonant in this household right now, to people worried about jobs and freelancing assignment and shooting. I mean, everybody, in every call I've been on, people are trying to assume as much control as they can in a situation where control is not a particularly plentiful commodity. So, you know, in sports are sort of doing what the rest of us are doing, which is a lot of best guesses and a lot of trying to cover their bases. I mean, one more point, and then I'll gladly hand the mic over, is let's not forget the role of insurance in all of these situations in sports. And it's not a particularly sexy topic, but a lot of these events have been covered by insurance policies. And if you're Wimbledon, there is a huge difference between Boris Johnson saying, this event cannot be held. This is a government edict. We are not allowing large-scale global sporting events. That is a much different situation, at least to people that hold policies, to Wimbledon reaching this conclusion on their own, saying we are deciding not to hold that event. So those are two very different scenarios. The same results. So in the grand scheme of things, you're going to end up at the same place. But if you are talking about recouping 70% or whatever it is of your revenues for an insurance policy, huge difference between you cannot hold this event and we are choosing not to hold this event. So it's just something to bear in mind. And I think the same thing I heard went for the WTA, which was a little bit strange how the tours weren't coordinated, but I do think we ought to keep in mind that there are some language in these insurance contracts, which might be dictating behavior and how some of these decisions are being reached and the timing. So anyway, feel free to cut me off and take the baton because I've just monologued, but thoughts about scheduling?
No, yeah. I think one of the things you talked about in your mailbag, which I think is just so interesting and so many people on Twitter have been talking about, is Laver Cup and, you know, September. Now all of a sudden, Laver Cup slid into that spot and really just had two successful years. And then now the French Open put its foot down, barged in the door without telling anyone, and just claimed its spot on the calendar. And for me, that was shocking that you could literally see it happening in real time, where players, people within the sport were finding out basically on Twitter that this had happened. No one had contacted the tours. No one had reached out to players beforehand. Everyone was finding out in real time. And that was crazy to me. And I can't believe that they, you know, just went ahead to pick this fall spot. Now, I know that they were probably expecting the Olympics to be canceled, but now that they are, there's this nice two-week spot on the calendar open. So I wonder what they are thinking, at the French Federation. given everything that's happened since they jumped ahead with that announcement.
If you thought a global pandemic would stop tennis infighting and turf wars, boy, were you wrong. I will share with you the one, a little bit of intel I have, which is the French Open is much more willing than Wimbledon to have what we're calling a closed door event. So have an event for a TV audience with no fans. I'm told that Wimbledon does not have a lot of interest in that. That's more appealing to the French Open. I'm also told that this date that we're now seeing freed up on the calendar, I don't think is of great appeal for Wimbledon to move. Who knows again? I mean, who knows best case scenario? I think the tennis was scheduled for July 29th. Is that right? The last few days of July extending into the first week of August. I'm not sure that Wimbledon has any interest in that. I am very skeptical, unfortunately, about whether there will be a Wimbledon 2020. Part of that is just a function of what we are hearing about the situation in the UK. I mean, Boris Johnson was talking about 12 weeks before we know anything. Well, 12 weeks puts us right into Wimbledon time. But I do think the prospect of holding these events, you know, we're going to see it with WrestleMania. We're going to see it with the NFL draft. We saw already with UFC. The NBA may move to this scenario. This idea of holding events for a TV audience with no one in the stands, I've heard that that is not of particular interest at the All England Club. So who knows? I mean, I suggested that maybe Indian Wells wants, as long as dates are now a free-for-all, maybe Indian Wells wants to think about those Olympic dates. People quickly, you know, reminded me that the Coachella Valley is not the place you want to be in late July and in early August.
Right.
But then again, I feel like all norms, and this not obviously not just tennis, not just sports. I mean, this is sort of civilization wide. All norms are off, and right. We are in a strange world right now.
Yeah, I think I don't know which player it was, but I saw someone say, you know, people were getting upset about the French Open claiming the spot, or just generally, you know, about the whole situation. And I think someone tweeted that, let's just be grateful that we could have the possibility of playing then. So I think that that's a, you know, good step back from the situation to say. And, you know, one of the things that was always important and is always critical for these players ahead of, you know, the summer swing, where you're going from grass to clay, and then you've got the summer at the U.S. Open, is those tune-ups, those lead-up tournaments. And I think one of the most interesting things is going to be that first day back for all of us across the board. I mean, I'm thinking about us, our first day back at the office, my first, you know, commute back on the subways and the trains. You know, what is it going to be like for the first tournament back? What tournament is that going to be? You know, is that going to be a big major? Is there going to be some smaller tournament on the ATP WTA tour that players wouldn't normally play in, that all of a sudden has these big names because it's the only one that they can really, you know, get out and play after this hiatus? So that's something I've been thinking about that I think is going to be interesting to see.
Yeah. And I think something that, you know, it's become clear throughout this whole crisis is that, I mean, this is first and foremost a public health crisis, but also this is at some level a class crisis. And we are seeing already in New York, certainly, you know, disproportionate impact falling to the underprivileged. And I think the same thing is mirrored in sports, and that I can't remember. I think Lindsay Davenport was saying this, you know, there, we forget this in tennis. Some players have their own gyms at home and have access to the training and tennis courts in the backyard, and other players don't. I mean, we were talking last week to Dvacek Pospisil, who was in his apartment in Vancouver, you know, doing pushups and sit-ups.
And he wasn't gonna hit a ball on a court for a pretty long time, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a much different scenario when you have, you know, your own academy, and you can, even if it's just going out there with a ball machine. And I think that's gonna play itself out once tennis resumes. I don't know. Do you have the hunger to play the Olympics next year that you had this year when 2020 was such a financial wash? If you're ranked, you know, number 50 in the world, are you making some different playing decisions because you had 1 year of your career where you didn't have the income opportunities that you expected to? So I think it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. I want to ask you, as someone who was, maybe even still is, I'm calling you an elite athlete. How do you think this time off, I'm calling this sabbatical nobody wanted, who benefits from this and who do you think suffers from this among the very different types of players there are in tennis? Who benefits and who doesn't?
That's a very generous label, by the way. I think the first person comes to mind is Roger Federer. How did he plan this knee surgery so well? He definitely comes to mind as someone who will benefit, no doubt, from this hiatus. I mean, he obviously was going to skip a significant time to recover, but he's the first person. But generally, I think, you know, your point about players who are near the ends of their career and who were tailoring their year to go to the games or just kind of put a ribbon on their tennis career, I think it's going to be very interesting to see. The one thing I do think is that rest, recovery, time off, whether that's for the mind or the body, for an athlete is going to benefit a lot of them. I think that sometimes, you know, you get caught up in the season and, you know, it's injuries, it's little nagging things, it's the travel, of course, that all these players go through. And this time really gives a lot of people to rest their bodies, you know, heal those little injuries, and then also give their mind a little bit of a break. I think a lot of times we see athletes just get burnt out a little bit. I mean, especially in tennis, we know how grueling the tour is. And this time, I think, will give people a little bit of appreciation, and they'll feel a little bit more grateful for that grind when they're able to get back to it. I think we're all sort of feeling that. So I think, especially for athletes, it's you've got to be sitting there saying, wow, I really wish I was going for a hit right now. I mean, I really wish I was hopping on a 14-hour plane ride right now. So those things, I think, will actually benefit the athletes. But, you know, I think there will be some people who might just say, hey, this was my last year. You know, I think about someone like Caroline Wozniak. You know, what if she had announced that her last tournament was going to be the U.S. Open? What does she do now? Right. I mean, I think you mentioned Carlos Suarez Navarro, right? Who you know, she has also announced that she was going to finish this year and just play the Olympics. And so now what does she do in her situation when she's been outspoken about that?
I was in contact with the Bryan brothers camp, and are going to stick to their plan. They are not going to prolong this. They declared 2020 their final year, and they're going to stick with it. They'll try and play when they can and maybe play world team tennis and hopefully the U.S. Open. But they are not going to change their plans. I wonder about Carlos Suarez Navarro, who, first of all, I can't think of a player who's more sort of underground appeal. A lot of players, like, who doesn't like Carlos Suarez Navarro? But she, you know, she would have gotten a great send-off at the clay events in Spain, and she would have played the French Open. She would have played the Olympics. I wonder if she's reconsidering her 2020. I mean, I think, you know, I use the term jokingly, but a sabbatical that exists in a way as this, you know, as a sort of restorative measure that you take some time off and you come back and you're a little bit replenished spiritually. Maybe you have some different techniques you're bringing back to the job. You've had some time to regroup. I think that's the best case scenario that you brought up, that these players might get this time back on the back end of their career. I mean, some of them, you know, a player recovering from injuries, you mentioned Roger, Andrescu's a name, and Jared Donaldson. I mean, we can, in some ways, maybe this time will help them. Someone like Coco Gauff is probably quite frustrated. She had all of this momentum and all this ascent. I guess if there's a plus side to this, she will be chronologically older and perhaps have some of the restrictions of the age eligibility rule loosened a little bit. I don't know what, I don't know what a mid-career player is thinking right now. You hope it would be, boy, this stinks if you're Dominic Thiem, but maybe this will enable me to play into my late 30s. Sorry, what were you saying?
He could use some time off.
Exactly. He could stand to cut back on the frequent flyer miles. I think the other thing you mentioned is really good, though, that about injuries, where, you know, look at Nadal's schedule over the last, really his career, over the last 15 years, and there have been quite a few gaps for injuries, often at the end of the year. I mean, even Roger had his issues in 2016, 2017. I mean, in 2015, 2016, Djokovic had some injury time off. I mean, I think just about every player has learned how to pace themselves and ration their energy and figure out a way to sort of stay in shape and stay sharp mentally while they are off tour. So I think that's something that maybe they can all draw upon during this time. But I think it must be frustrating too, because what I was saying before, there is no sort of date on the calendar they can circle. That a lot of times with injury, you have a rehab schedule, and if all goes as well as planned, Stan Wawrinka has said, I'm going to try and get back by the Australian Open, even if I'm only 80%, and it's something to work toward. I think it, I can't remember who, I saw a tweet by a player, I think it was Ons Jabeur, who said something to the effect of, you know, I don't know how hard to push myself. I don't know how hard I should be practicing, because what am I practicing for?
So true.
And I think that's something that really all of us, but an athlete probably feels this extra sharply. That's something that really must be frustrating, that you don't know when you're coming back.
We've had a lot of stories at SI in the past week on all the Olympians, athletes who are in sports that this is, you know, this is it. The Olympics are where they do everything. It's where they make the make or break their careers, their, you know, everything they've worked for. And so for them, the fact that everything has essentially been pushed a year, it's almost easier for them to say, all right, I was, you know, tapering, I was really getting myself ready, getting down to within a few months of the games, and now it's postponed for a year or so. So now they sort of, unfortunately, but it's very doable, just restructure their schedule in order to peak again in, you know, I'm guessing the summer of 2021. But for, you know, to your point, it's such a great point. I mean, tennis, they don't know when that next tournament's going to pop up. I mean, as of now, are they, you know, is that early June date something that they're aiming towards? And, you know, as we said earlier, that date could be different for every player. How do they know, you know, where they're going and what surface they're playing on? I mean, there's so many questions. And I think, that first day back is going to be, it's going to be bigger than the first day of school. It's going to be bigger than, you know, that first match at the Australian Open. It's going to be really interesting to see where everybody lands and how everyone's feeling.
I always say that the Australian Open always is sort of this referendum on how tennis players spent their month or maybe 2 months, if they're lucky, how they spent their off season. I mean, the word, you know, sort of the book on Andre Agassi was always that he was successful in Australia because he and Gil Reyes worked so diligently in November, December. This is a whole new level of how I spent my time off. On a positive note, has anything, what's made you smile about tennis in the last week or so?
I will say, I mean, this is controversy a little bit, so it's, you know, made me smile, but I guess it's not that positive. But the, you talk about how Coco Gauff, you know, her age will continue to grow in this time, but one of the things that people have been asking about is the rankings, and so obviously they have frozen them, and they will stay put during this hiatus. But the controversy about, you know, Djokovic and his weeks at number one during this time, whether or not, you know, that should count or not count, I'm curious to hear, because for me, this was a funny debate that people were really getting at on Twitter.
Whether, in theory, he's going to start eclipsing more records when his ranking is frozen.
Exactly.
I mean, I think you, I think these weeks have to count.
Ah, do you? Don't you?
I don't think you can. I mean, you know, the time chronologically is going by. I think.
But what if he loses at a tournament within that time?
Yeah, right. No, I mean, I think it's the same way, you know, Dominic Thiem, is he the defending champion of Indian Wells? I would argue yes.
Right, no, but that's different because he's not getting points as time passes on. That's just a label, essentially, right?
Right, right. I think as long as the calendar is marching on, I think you've got to play it where it lies.
Oh, boy.
I think it's very strange to just suddenly turn off the spigot until players can earn points again. Let me ask you, social media, anyone distinguish themselves?
I think, again, I said it earlier, but the fact that a lot of these players have found out about news over, you know, over Twitter, I think is pretty interesting. The way that I know Joe Konta has been sharing some of her home workouts and things, which have been, you know, pretty interesting. I think a lot of people are just turning the camera on their phones, you know, and really giving us a glimpse into what they're doing at home and how they're staying fit, how they're dealing with all of this. So it's cool to see, you know, everyone contribute. And I will say the fact that so many players have donated money, you know, to help fight this virus has been really good. Go tennis on that.
Yeah, exactly.
What about you? Who are you?
Oh, I think Christy Ahn has been an early leader in the clubhouse. We were joking on Tennis Channel. She ranked, I think her ranking is frozen at 96, but she has top five social game. Stan Wawrinka has been good. There's a great conversation with Stan Wawrinka and Benoit Paire. First, Benoit Paire has this biblical beard, and you're thinking, boy, that guy's been self-isolating for an awful long time. And then you remember it's Benoit Paire, and he always looks like that. But it's if you haven't seen it, it's a great conversation.
Wawrinka's been pretty good too.
Who has?
Stan Wawrinka.
Stan's been great. No, Stan's been great. Yeah, no, Stan has top five level social game as well. You know, I will plug one of the employers and say that the Tennis Channel live show that now has brought Andy Roddick out of broadcasting retirement has been a lot of fun. It's all done over Skype and Zoom, and it's been a logistical challenge, but we're on live noon Eastern for 3 hours every day. I've enjoyed the discussion about tennis books.
Yes.
It seems like a lot of people are reading more. I would also point out, are you watching Tiger King?
I am not. Actually, I just finished, or I'm just about to finish Cheer, which is something I thought I'd never say, but that's next on the list. Do you recommend it?
I would twin this answer. Cheer as well, but it's good to know that there are subcultures that are just as batshit crazy as tennis. I mean, this Tiger King is like nothing I've seen, but I would put Cheer in the same boat. Tennis does not have a monopoly on endearing dysfunction. If you think our sport is wacky, have a few episodes with Tiger King. I mean, looking forward, what, you know, we're all in the situation where everybody's sort of saying the same thing, right? We're hoping for the best, and we're hoping this ends sooner rather than later, and everyone's trying to stay sane and stay in shape. Anything sort of specific to tennis you're looking for apart from sort of the scheduling sifting itself out?
I think one of the things that always really interests me about tennis is how, I mean, especially at the majors, Indian Wells, the men and the women are there. We're playing the same tournament and really coming together. I think you talk about, you know, this weird subculture, but tennis is very much a family in that way. And I'm interested to see when things kind of open up, how players are helping one another. I think one of the interesting things is always before matches, you'll see, you know, players hitting with each other on the practice court. Even right before the match, you know, you're hitting the ball back and forth with your opponent. It's something that people who are not in the sport like can't understand. You know, you don't go play a game of pickup, or, you know, you don't warm up in basketball with your opponent, but you do that in tennis. So the way that people will help each other, be there for each other, you know, whether that's, hey, come practice on my court or whatever it is, I think is something that I'm looking forward and hopeful to see as we get through this and come out on the other side.
That's well put. That's the more charitable. I think people are hopefully thinking in those terms and thinking about coming together. I've had an agent wrote to me about his idea for setting up some sort of a temporary fund for players who are not flying privately and don't have home gyms to get through this time. I do hope that some of these schisms in class, I mean, we have them with players, we have them with tournaments as well. I mean, the French Open was definitely a flex, as my kids would say. I'm hoping tennis unifies and doesn't splinter, and that we don't have these class distinctions and people with different agendas and different different points of view. I hope everyone sort of stays unified. It's a crazy time. I mean, I feel like I've probably done, as many of a half dozen of these kinds of interviews and conversations every day, and sports is just frozen. Yeah. And we can go back and play classic matches, and we're all trying to sort of come up with creative ways to remain fans and tell stories. But it's just really weird not to have any games and any actions. And you say this should be, we're coming up on, I suspect this would be final weekend for Indian Wells, and we'd be turning our attention to Miami. The mm-hmm. sports calendar, you're realizing, really has this binding power. I mean, it really is how a lot of us chart our year, and never mind our iCalendar. It's just really weird to think about the last few days of March and not think about tennis and NCAA basketball and opening day coming and the Masters on the horizon and the NBA regular season winding down. It's just a strange, strange time for all of us. But
it even ties in with the weather. I mean, I think that spring feeling that comes in the air is really reminds us of all those things you're talking about. You know, you have, I feel like that April Saturday or Sunday, you know, really has that feeling of March Madness. You talk about opening day in the spring is such a, you know, a big time, all these things. And of course the tennis calendar is so quick moving. And so the fact that we've been stuck really at this point is just, it's unlike anything before.
We used to chart time, you know, we used to say, it's getting warmer and it must be spring and here comes baseball. And now it's getting warmer. Let's hope that at some cellular level, this will weaken this devastating virus. Strange times, Jamie.
Yes. Strange. We all just have to keep on and get through it. That's what we've got to do. And luckily, I think, as you said, we've got a lot of good tennis from years past to get us through, and lots of good social media people to follow in the tennis world to keep us entertained.
And I think your other point is really the best point of our conversation, which is if this has the effect of not just freezing rankings, but freezing the accumulation of years, if this has the effect of preserving players of all ages and players getting this time on the back end, if this means Roger Federer can rehab, if this means Serena Williams has some downtime to go be a mom, if this has the impact of prolonging time, I think that's an optimistic way to look at this, but maybe that's something we can all hope for and take away as some silver lining here in a situation that doesn't have a lot of silver lining right now to offer.
We got to hold on to what we can. Look at the positive.
All right. We will have another podcast next week. We're out of the business of having live in studio guests, but we will, we've had a number of players that we're trying to coordinate, finding a convenient time. Jamie, it's a pleasure as always.
Thanks.
Live well, live safe, stay safe. And, we'll stay in communication, but we'll do this again in a week.
Sounds good. Thanks, John.
Thanks. All right. That does it for this week. Thanks as always to Jamie. Thanks everyone for listening. A little unconventional, but these are unconventional times we're living in. Stay safe, everyone. We will continue to try and bring these podcasts every week. Again, a reminder that Tennis Channel is doing live programming every day from noon till 3 Eastern time. Plenty of other classic matches. This week, we're counting down the top 100 players of all time. We all eagerly await the return of live sports, but until then, we will do our best to remain fans and we'll do our best to cover the sport. So stay safe, everyone, wherever you are, and we'll do it again in a week.